All right, I think we'll get started. First of all, thanks everyone for coming. I know it's difficult, 5 o'clock, you may be getting tired, so hopefully the session is gonna be informational and you'll get a lot out of this. My name's Eamon O'Reilly. I'm on the System Center team as a program manager, and I focus mostly on the orchestration and automation sides. And with me today is Srikant Ranganathan, who's a PM also on the System Center side, focusing on the service manager side. And then we have Ketan Galali, who's going to focus, he's a PM also, who focuses more on the application management, application insight, and how that actually pulls into the System Center solution. So hopefully a lot of you were at the session that Brad Anderson gave earlier, and he had three key pillars up there on what is a cloud, how do you enable IT as a service in your organization. And in today's session, we're going to focus mostly on the third of those, which is around the self-service and automation pieces of that, and how do you actually need those key components in order to really deliver that private cloud. We're also going to touch a little bit around how do you tie in the different assets of System Center in enabling that private cloud solution. So this entails a lot of bringing things into a common store, which we have our CMDB for, and what are the processes in place after you've got your information in that you can start to deliver those IT services. So what you see up here really is kind of an overview of where System Center sees IT going in relation to private cloud and IT as a service. So I think we've been talking about this. A lot of you probably have been tech ed for the last few years, and we've been trying to, all of us really driving towards how do we enable our end users to really get those IT services when they need them. And a lot of it's been challenging. I know I've come in the last few years, and a lot of it is we keep changing. The infrastructure, virtualization came in, then we brought in new management tools, and then we already have acquired other pieces of the business or other organizations. And so actually delivering on this IT as a service has been very difficult for most of us. And you know, I talked to a lot of you earlier and customers, that's kind of knowing where we need to get to, but how do we actually get there? And so the way Microsoft has looked at this is we've actually, with System Center 2012, delivered a set of tools that really enable you now to bring all the different assets inside of your organization into a single place, and then deliver the services and the IT private cloud solutions on top of that. How we've done this is we've really broken it into two types of users we see in the organization. There are those application owners who really consume all the different services that IT provides, and then we have the actual provision of those services from the data center administrator. And what you need to do is somehow get all the data center administration staff or stuff they build over so you can now deliver to that consumer of them in a self-service manner. And how we do this is with all the different System Center assets out there from virtual machine manager through operations manager and orchestrator, we have the ability to pull in everything that's inside your data center into a single CMDB. And then once you have all that information in there, you then are able to actually build self-service catalogs, self-service portals on top of that information. And then the key piece after that, that Brad mentioned a lot of is, well, self-service really doesn't work unless you can automate it. You know, once you get to a certain amount of machines, doing things, customized work or doing things manually really doesn't enable IT as a service or any private cloud solution. So we have Orchestrator now as part of the System Center suite that really enables you now to actually automate all those back-end services. So how do we see doing this? System Center really looks at it and coming up with three different things you want to do in order to actually enable private cloud or IT as a service. The first one of those is you need standardization. And the reason for the standardization is you want to be able to enforce compliance and regulation, so there's not a lot of custom things being done, a lot of manual things being done. But you also enable reliability, because once you can get to a smaller set of things you offer to your end user, then you can have a repeatable process that you can automate those from. So you really need to figure out what are those core standard services you're going to offer and work with your consumers, those business users or those users of your services, figure out really what they need, and then determine from a data center administrator, how am I going to build those in a standard way that I can offer to those users? The second thing you really need is that self-service I talked about. You have to be able to have your consumers get the IT service when they need it. If you don't really start driving towards that, you're never really going to get ahead, and you're always going to be trying to catch up, trying to deliver enough services, and they're always going to be saying it's not fast enough. You need to get to a point where they don't really go to you looking for stuff. They go to this portal, this self-service capability, and they just consume it when they need it. And the last thing I talked about earlier was this automation piece. You know, that's one thing we struggled with in the past, and now with Orchestrator part of the product, you really need to think about every service you offer up there needs to have automation behind it when it's necessary. It doesn't mean the change of control is not necessary, so you will need approvals where if they're asking to do stuff that needs approval, maybe they need to get access to something and you need to give them approval. You need to be able to tie in those manual processes that are still required in change control with automated provisioning or automated tasks that happen behind that. So really it's about approvals, change management, and then the automation of all the services. That's the only way you're going to get to this kind of minimize human error and get to the goal of having IT as a service or that private cloud that we've been talking about all week. So I'm going to actually now have Kaiten come up, and he's going to talk a little bit about how do we actually bring all these assets together so we can actually deliver on this IT service. And then we're going to go through a whole scenario where you'll see coming from all the assets coming in to actually delivering on that self-service portal. So, thank you.
Thank you, Eamon. So how many of you actually have concept or actually have worked with CMDB in your organizations or think it's an – okay, that's quite a few actually, more than almost about 50%. That's pretty good. So as you can see that – or for those who have not actually looked at it but aspire to, CMDB forms kind of the central storage or central information repository that allows you to kind of drive your process and automation throughout any type of cloud delivery, service delivery, any type of IT service delivery you would need to have. And with System Center, it becomes very easy. The CMDB consists of, you know, your work items, your configuration items, your knowledge articles, and then all your templates, and it basically also includes forms and reporting and data warehouses. The biggest hurdle that organizations face, actually, is actually populating that CMDB. And people struggle. They take days, sometimes months, arguing about the model around CMDB. What should the model look like? You know, should we have this? Should we have that? And with System Center, we make it really, really easy. You have pre-built model out of the box that contains most of the stuff you need, and then you can build on top if you want. So first of all, we have the model out of the box. Then the other thing we have is very easy to use connectors. How many of you have like Config Manager in your organization? Okay, almost 70%. Operations Manager, another 70%. So once you have those, an Active Directory, I think everybody most likely. And once you have these, how can we easily populate information from all these sources into CMDB so easily? And it's very easy to basically have that integration with the CMDB. We have built-in connectors that pull in resources from all of these sources, that we have, Active Directory, Config Manager, Operations Manager, and then kind of build a CMDB. That drives the process and automation. And then on top of that, what we have done is built a layer of solutions on top. Quite a few are familiar with the process, ITIL process. It's actually very big in UK, and number of people I talk to here is basically they're very familiar with the ITIL process. So we have incident management solution, we have change management solution, release management, service request, and service catalog is new in 2012. We are built into System Center Service Manager, which again allows you to continue to have your service delivery from an IT perspective to your customers or to your users. And on top of the solution, you need self-service. So we have brand new service catalog and self-service portal that's built on top for Service Manager 2012 that will enable some of the self-service that you'll see. And then we have deep integration with orchestration that Eamon talked about a little bit in terms of the automation. So you'll see this automation all that stuff in play as we go through the demos today. So some of the standard practices that you'll see, kind of the theme throughout the demo, right? So one of the things you'll see is, and I'll show you a little bit about, how do we import the data? I'll actually show you how easy it is to import the data into the CMDB. How you basically build your service catalog. We'll not go into the details of this, how we build into the service catalog, but it's very easy. You don't need to require any code to build in any forms or anything like that. You can do it out of the box very easily. And I'll show you, it's basically a template-driven mechanism, and I'll show you some of the templates that we are using during the demos. And then you'll also see how easy it is to submit self-service requests from the service catalog. Okay? So now, once we do this portion of the demo, then we'll go into saying, hey, you built your service catalog, you built your CMDB, you built basically how the self-service portal looks like, and then users start putting requests, or from your applications, you start generating some of the issues that are there. Then how do you operate and optimize and maintain this service level request? That's part of the process also the second half of the demos we'll see. Okay, so now let me show you a little bit about CMDB. Okay, it should be there. There you go. Okay, so first thing I do is basically I'll show you some of the connectors that we built in, and then here, you can see that I have connectors that are built in from Operations Manager, from Active Directory. There is an Orchestrator connector that gets in the runbooks. There is also a VMM connector that gets in the Virtual Machine Manager templates. You will see in another session tomorrow on how we actually can create some of the virtual machines from the templates that we have from VMM. There is also an alert connector from OM. Basically, you'll see that today on how the alerts are generated from OM and forwarded onto Service Manager, and how can we apply automation to those alerts created. And I'll just pull up one of them just to see how easy it is or simple it is to create these connectors. And all of them actually follow very similar pattern where you provide, you know, the server you want to connect to, your credentials, and how you basically use it. As soon as it comes up here. So you can see that we provide a connector here, and then what we do is basically here, we provide the server that you want to connect to. In this case, the contoso.com. You provide the credentials, and then in this Active Directory connector, you can either select all computers or all objects, or actually you can select individual computers or objects. Or you can specify your own LDAP query that you can specify to have a more of a custom input or import from Active Directory. So all of these connectors are very, very simple to use from that perspective. And basically, within minutes, you will have data coming in into your CMDB. You don't have to worry about what columns I need. You don't have to worry about, you know, how does this match up. There are sources coming from multiple places. And let me show you actually one of the config manager here, config item. There are sources coming from multiple places. And we kind of merge these sources and give you kind of one view of what it is on your CMDB. For example, let's look at computers here. And then let's look at if we have all Windows computers here. And I'm going to bring up one of the computers here. And you will see that we have all the information regarding the computer. Some of that has come from OM. Some of them has come from OM through the Virtual Machine Manager. Some of that has come through Config Manager. And some of that has come through Active Directory. So you can see that you have the Active Directory SID for this one. You got the asset tag, serial number. And if you go to the hardware, you'll have the details of the hardware. You didn't have to enter any of this information. This basically takes advantage of all the stuff that you have in your environment that has basically, with Config Manager Agent, you have that information. Ops Manager Agent, you have that information. That's one reason we decided to kind of import that stuff in. And you have software updates also. And all of this actually helps in troubleshooting when you're dealing with incidents or issues with a service or an application or a user's incident. It helps to troubleshoot all of this. Okay. I'm going to go back to the presentation here a little bit. So I got a little bit ahead of myself in showing you the demo, but basically this tells you all the information that comes along from Virtual Machine Manager. We get the service templates, the virtual machine templates, logical networks, load balancers. We get all that information from Virtual Machine Manager. From Operations Manager, you get all this information, servers, clients, hardware, website, databases. So some of these things are not available in Config Manager, like databases or applications, right? So you can get that. And you can also get, if you have a distributed application in Operations Manager, it'll come as a service in Service Manager with all the relationships intact. So you can actually relate incidents to that service. From Config Manager, you can, again, get the computers, the hardware inventory information, the software updates. We get all that from Config Manager. Active Directory, we get the user information, groups and computers information. And also we get the manager information, too, so that we can actually use that in our change approval. If somebody wants to provide a change approval which says, hey, I want to make sure line manager approves it, then we automatically put in the manager in the approval chain. And then we can get line of business apps and third-party management tools. We can connect via Orchestrator through the automation that we have from Orchestrator. Okay. And there are other options, too. If all this doesn't meet your need, you can have your CSV data import. We have PowerShell. We have SDK that you can use to import your data in. And then, again, it provides you more of a consolidated view, as you can see here, where basically it tells you what information we get from certain sources, and then the computer in CMDB actually has that single source of information or a single view of that information that's available for an analyst or for anybody operations person who can look at and get that single view. Okay? Now I'm going to invite Srikanth, who's going to talk about the self-service and the service catalog. So you saw the import of the CMDB. Then we'll talk about building the self-service, building and on the self-service of the service catalog. And then we'll go into the operate and optimize. Here you go.
Thank you, Kieran. Good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me? Okay, good. So we, in the keynotes, we saw Brad talk about self-service as one of these key components. In the cloud-optimized IT, we saw Eamon talk about self-service earlier in the slide, and then Caitlin went through self-service as one of the core components. So what I'll do in the next few minutes is to actually show a self-service portal, and you can actually see the kind of emphasis that Microsoft makes in the area of self-service, which is very crucial for us, as we see in the role of IT as a service. We want people to actually consume the services that IT offers. Through the self-service portal, we want people to, our IT to be enable automation. And we see this as two key pillars. And without either of those, we strongly believe that our goal of IT as a service will be severely compromised. So we see investments continuing to happen in the self-service as a portal experience as well as automation. So, any catalog, so the way we look at self-service experience is IT should be able to offer, package up their services and expose them through a catalog, which is discoverable, which is then it's categorized into different kinds of services that they offer, and then tie them up, and these catalog items, users would just come in and fill up certain forms, and it speaks the language of the users, and that's the real power. Is you have to be able to come back and talk the language of the users without overcomplicating the downstream decisions that you make in the form of automation. So you capture the user intent and turn around and either automate the process or subject it to your own manual processes if that's not automatable. But you hide the complexity. So you show the simplicity at the end, the user level. It should be a very simple experience to discover the services that you offer, fill up the form, and almost at that point, the user experience ends, and you have downstream processes kick in. And as a platform, we offer the ability for you to customize these forms, provide the services, capture the end user inputs, and keep them in the database so that you can have an audit in terms of what happened when, and create reports out of it, because a lot of people end up saying that, hey, let me understand this service to KPI ratios. They'll have SLAs. So you need to have all those other things that you measure your organization with and be able to follow up. So we allow you, our platform allows you to create forms, and you can do this without writing code and capture those answers and the questions and the answers the end user inputs into the system and then transform them back into the processes that you want. And as you probably see that once we get into this catalog mode, oftentimes you need some kind of an assistance in the form of knowledge articles or help articles. So we allow you to actually create, the platform allows you to create help articles and for much more faster requests that can happen. The end users themselves can read and then solve their own problems. Or if it does get to tier one or tier two, they can also solve the problem by looking at the articles themselves. So the knowledge articles and the help articles are part of this framework as well. And as with any portal, you'd want to go back and say, I want to track what I did, and you'll be able to go see what you submitted. You'll be able to do that. And in some cases, if you're an approver, you'll be able to go back and approve or deny requests all through the portal as well. And I'll just walk you through those for a second. And this is four. Sorry about that. So for a moment, I'm going to imagine myself as a person who's in a new team, and he just joined this organization. He's been told that, hey, here is the team that you belong to. I'm a tester. I need to go access an app and then run my tests, and that's my role. And it's a typical onboarding, a new employee onboarding process. Certain things have been set up, and people have told me that, hey, go here and do this. And that's what I'm going to do. So the application that I'm responsible for testing is called Dinner Now, and I'm going to go do that. So what happened here is I tried to go and access. As much as we want our operations to be streamlined, people have told me that here's the URL and here's what needs to happen. My local business team leader, who is responsible for, hasn't actually added me to the security group so that I have access to this app. I get an access denied. Very normal, very common experience. You can extend this to a whole bunch of scenarios. People actually forget their passwords. You can have passwords reset, or they have access to a file share that you don't have access to, maybe something else. But it falls into the category of things that, hey, it's a very common experience. And you'll get so much of these requests that you think that this is worth automating, and we should. And that's what we wanted to show here. So in this particular case, yes, I have access denied, but it's, my project lead also told me that, hey, if when you run into these problems in Dinner Now, why don't you go to the portal and then file a request? Our IT will fix it, so which is what I'm going to do right now. So luckily, I have access to this URL, so I go here, and I'm going to go click on Dinner Now. And Dinner Now, the IT has exposed a set of things that I can do on Dinner Now app, right? That's what they wanted to do. They want to expose a common set of requests in the form of this catalog, and I have access to that. And the first thing that I'm going to do is I don't have access to this site, so I'm going to actually go back and request access. And what you see here is if you have a lot of knowledge articles and if there are some common experiences that you want self-service requests, users to be solving themselves without even filing a request, here's an opportunity for you to go back and then do that. And there are some knowledge articles that I can download, and I can satisfy the request myself. But in this case, I'm going to proceed to actually go file a request. So there's only one thing that is needed here, because it's Windows integrated auth. Windows Auth integrated, so the request actually knows who is making the request, and the only other thing that I need here is the business justification. This is a very simple request. I know the context. The operating context here is dinner now. I know the person who's actually submitting the request, and the only other thing that is required here is the business context, and that the end user experience ends there once they submit it here, and we really want it to be that easy. And then later on, we'll show you how to actually create this request without any code. And that's the operational side of experience as well. But from the end user standpoint, the person came in, submitted a request, and they're done. And from an operator standpoint, behind the scene, a couple of things are happening. One, this request might require approval. In this case, it does. So we have, when the request itself was created, when the thing was put up in the catalog, we templatized that by saying, hey, send it through approval process. When approval is done, go back and actually add the person to the security group, right? And that entire thing is, that workflow is going to happen. And in the interest of this demo, auto-approval flag has been set, so it'll fly through the approval process. But in your case, it could be different, and you can route it through a different approval process where somebody actually goes and approves it, and subsequently the automation will kick in, and the orchestrator runbook will execute the operation. So in this, the background, things are happening. And by now, the AD group has been changed. So we can also go back, and I'll show you. If I'm interested, I can find out what's the current status of my request. And it'll give you a sneak peek into so if you can actually see here, there are two activities. That's how the administrator has set it up. The administrator set it up by saying, hey, one, you do need a review activity. Somebody has to approve it. As I mentioned earlier, this is auto-approved because the class of requests that can be auto-approved. There'll be another class of requests that requires approval, and that's totally fine. But if you can see the annotations here, RA requires, the annotation RA means it's a review activity, and that's currently in completed state. Once it's completed, the next activity that will get picked up in the workflow is to actually run the runbook. And RB stands for runbook automation, and that's actually in progress. And at some point in time, it'll actually get completed, and the AD group will be updated. And this is also an opportunity for me to now go back and check whether I do have access. While it's waiting, so what you saw right now was a very simple experience. There is a catalog. An IT administrator can take a set of services, expose them in the catalog, group them into some kind of a intuitive category. In this case, we saw dinner now as a category of, and then you had others that I'll go through shortly. And then users come in and specifically request something and then go away. And then you, on the back end, have complete tracking in terms of what the request was, how the SLAs, how you can actually go back and run reports in terms of how many requests that I get, how do I respond to those, do I do that in a rhythmic fashion, is my organization efficient? You can do all those things downstream using this product. But at the end of the day, you help your customers very quickly by automating this, and that was the entire exercise. And I just wanted to demonstrate the fact that somebody can come in and file a request, and then back end operate. So now I'm going to go back and play a little around with the app. Now that I have access, I can actually go do all those things.
I'm going to break it. Don't tell Srikant.
And I'm a tester. That's what I'm going to do. Let's see. Nothing is happening. That itself is worth the request. So it's spinning. So what we want to show here is now that I have access, I actually don't. So what Caden did right now is he did something with the system either intentionally or unintentionally to force I've lost access to my app. And this is a very similar situation as well. And what we can do now is go back to my service catalog. And in my service catalog, not only can I go request myself access, I can actually submit an incident. And this is a choice, again, you have made in your org to go back and facilitate self-service. So in this case, the dinner now as a service itself has problems. So what you'll see here is a different set of questions being asked, as it should be. And if there are nothing that is non-logicals are not going to help, I'm going to go right here that says I get 503 errors. And then you have an ability to go back and classify this. You can either let the end user specify this, or based on dinner now context, you can templatize this yourself for your go back and filtering and auditing reasons or even reporting. But we wanted to just show this. Again, we are showing different ways by which you can users can enter data. So if I had a screenshot of this app saved here, so I'm just going to attach here for context. And I'm submitting it. So it's going to be, this experience is fairly similar to the previous experience. A service request has been created. Service request has its own set of workflows. And this time, I'm not really sure, I need to look at it. Most likely it's a manual activity because it's an incident. This has not been thoroughly investigated enough to templatize it. So if I go look at it, most likely there is no approval required because it doesn't make any sense for somebody to go back and put an approval in an incident problem request. But you do have some kind of a manual activity. Somebody will get assigned to go back and fix it. And I think Kaden can walk you through that scenario later on. But before I exit, let me at least show you this one. An incident record has been created, and it'll have some amount of workflow in it. And again, the key point here is these things are something that you as an admin can control for your business as it suits you. So the product comes out of the box with certain set of templates, and you configure the templates for your reason and for your organization. But the overall processes, the platform capabilities are all exercised in this process. Okay? So that ends my session. And Kaden, do you want to just take over?
Thank you, Srikant. Let's see. Okay. So what you saw there was basically Srikant showed some of the self-service portal capabilities, service catalog capabilities. You saw he filled in a couple forms, couple requests, and the things were happening in the background. In the middle, you know, I did went ahead and stopped the app pool. So that's why he was not able to access the application again. And I'm going to go back and show you some of the things there so that see there's no black magic. It's all the things we have set up, right? So before I go back, what I wanted to show you basically is that where we are in the process, you saw importing of the stuff. I'll show you a little bit about the build on how we actually did build some of the templates. And you saw the self-service, and we'll also see now the operate portion of it on basically the service level agreements and objectives in there. So let's talk a little bit about the service level agreements and objectives, and which are very important in your service delivery and automation. You can meet and exceed your service level objectives if you actually have automation in place. And that's why it's very important. So from a service level objective or agreements perspective, there are two things that you want to look at. One is the one thing that we have divided was calendars and metrics. So you look at from a calendar perspective, we support multiple calendars where you have, you know, you could have different calendars for different time zones that you want to support, for different help desks that you want to support. So it does support holidays, does support business hours, and then you have multiple calendars. The service level metrics, in the box, we support the metrics for incident and service requests. You can create your metrics for incident service requests, more metrics for incident service requests. The one we have shipped for incident service requests are resolution time, completion time, the first response time metrics in there, and I'll show you that. And then you can define your own time-based metrics. Again, we support time-based metrics, so those are the things you can support from a service level agreements perspective. and you'll see the real thing instead of this just a screenshot. And then you have service level objectives. So once you have a calendar and your metrics defined, what you want to do is you can define your service level objectives, which are supported for all work items, and they are based on queues. So most of your help desks are actually tied to queues, right? You have tier one queue, or you might have some other queue, the tier two queue, or you might have a escalation queue that you have that you support, and then you tie your service level metrics to that, service level objects to that. You can specify target and warning thresholds on, and hey, I want to be warned before this gets, before this breaches. So you can specify those warning thresholds. You can be notified. You have notification support. Again, from a form perspective, you'll see some visual notification you're achieving, basically you're breaching information or you're about to breach. And you can also have email notifications set up. So these two things basically combine your service level agreement. So basically your service level objective, you define your calendar, you define your service level metric, and then you define your service level objective. That kind of forms your service level agreement, which has the visibility and notifications and and into the reactive process that you may have. Okay? So now let's look at this, and I'll show you also some of the things that were happening in the back end. Okay. I'm number two. Let's wait. Crank. Okay. Yeah, so you see that I had stopped the app pool, and that's why Srikanth was not able to access it. What I'm going to do is, before I go into the detail of there, what I want to make sure I can meet my service level agreement, I want to see what Srikanth has filed. Actually, let me do one thing first. What I wanted to show you was basically you saw that DinnerNow admins actually had only the Cloud Admin 01. And if I actually open this up again, you should see Cloud User 03, that was Srikanth was logged in as, should be added to the group. Let's see if that worked perfectly or not. There you can see that. That was added automatically to the group. And it was done was basically there was a service request template, or there was a service request that was created, and I'll show you that shortly right here. If I go back to, it's probably completed service requests. And if I open up the service request here, you will see that actually this one is probably an older one, but it's actually the same. It's actually this is an older one, actually. Let me just look at the current one, which is this one. You can see some of the information would have been populated from the template itself, that has been populated from the template, and things like you can see Srikanth's name that came in there. You can see it was urgency, medium, all that priority from the template. Source was portal, area of security, and then you see the activities that were completed in there in terms of the approval activity that was auto-completed, then the add user to the run group, add user to the book, right, was completed. And also you will see that there were a couple of service level objectives that was met in terms of the service request completion. In this case, this one really, first response time, really didn't matter in this case because I actually didn't have to respond to Srikanth because it already completed the activity itself. So you can see that the service level objective was met in this case here. Then the other thing you can look at, now I'm going to open up the runbook. You saw that add user to the group. All it did was basically there was an orchestration runbook. I'm not going to go into detail into the runbook here. Eamon is an expert here. He's our automation expert. He'll go into some of the other automation that we have built in, and he'll show you some of that in the runbook there. But this is basically a runbook which allows you to add user to the group that I created, a simple add user to the group. Okay. Sorry, so the question was, let me repeat it. Did the runbook who actually came in after the activity, the previous activity was completed? Okay, so that basically the runbook will actually return an error if that was not completed. Then the service request would actually be failed if it was not completed. Okay, so you can control that in the runbook to return success or fail, and then overall service request will complete or fail. Okay, so let's look at some of the things in here. So now what we're going to do here is that Srikanth has also filed an incident. The application is down currently, right? So I don't want to waste a lot of time. Let me look at that incident that he has filed. He has filed it from the portal. I'm going to look at all open portal incidents. So I have a queue for that or a view for that. And you can see that he is given this 503 error. He has filed this incident right here. What I'm going to do is, and typically people do, is assign that incident to the analyst. Assign it to themselves. So when you select the incident right here, and then what you could do here is open up the incident right here. And you can see the thing that he has some of the things were filled in from the template again, and some of the things were from his input. So you saw that 503 errors he has put in, no problem he's put in, and then also the other things were filled in from the template. He didn't have to type it in. It went to the support group tier 1. It got assigned to Cloud User 01, and then it also, if there was no action log in this case, but there is an attached file, it says, right? So I can go to the related items right here. And not only that I have attached file, I also have a knowledge article that's automatically attached to my template. But let me look at this attached file. If I look at this attached file, I can see that's OS 503 error. And I've seen this error before. All I needed to do is start the app pool. But what's happening is basically this seems to be happening recurrently. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to first get my users up and running. That's generally the case. What you always want to do is get your users up and running, and then you figure out what you're going to do from a problem perspective. Okay, so I'm going to do here is let's see here. I get back here. The app pool is stopped. I'm going to start the app pool. Okay, start the IS here. And then it'll get the user up and running. And in the meantime, what I'll do is I'll make sure I respond to that incident, okay, so that I meet my SLA. And you can also see from a service level perspective, I have two of these SLAs that are there. What is the first response? What I'm going to do here is I'm going to just, since I need to respond to Srikanth, I just say I'm going to set my first response, have talked to the user, and looking into the problem. Okay. And then basically just sets the first response date. You can see that it sets the first response date. And then I can apply this. Basically, at least it takes care of that SLA. But once the site is also up, I can actually make sure the site is up. I can go here. I can refresh it just to make sure if the site's up or not. If the site's up, then I can refresh. Then I can resolve the incident that's there. And then also the other thing that we had that you didn't see was if I go to all the incidents that are assigned to me, when the site came down, what happened was there was also operations manager monitoring the site, right? And we wanted to create incidents out of those alerts. So you see that these are the incidents that came in from operations manager. You can see the time, which is right now in terms of 8:15 a.m. is showing you the time on the U.S. time, right? So, but it's there. Basically, these are the alerts that were created right now. And then you can see that once I get the site up, these alerts will get resolved themselves automatically. The alerts, you can see that they're getting resolved. because the site is coming back up, the operations manager resolving the alert, and then it resolves the incident. But what I want to do is I have this interruption, ongoing interruption coming. So what I'm going to do is first is I'm going to escalate this to my tier two that so that, hey, I keep on getting some of these incidents. I'm seeing this more often. What can you do about it? There are some automation that they can do. And then also I want to make sure that somebody is looking into it in terms of the long-term fix for it, right? So what I can do is basically I can select these incidents, and I can actually create a problem record. I can create a problem record, and basically somebody would say, now look into the problem record. So saying dinner now. Yes. So here, in here, if you see that, control one. You can see that it's create problem. You can do that. And once you create a problem record, and not only that, it actually basically, it'll relate all these incidents together to the problem. So all the incidents that I selected there, it'll be related to the problem in there. So I create a problem record right now. I can assign it to somebody here. In this case, I'll just assign it to somebody here pretty quickly. Cloud admin 01. And then I can, you know, select a category, application, impact and urgency, and then I can select that in here. So this way, basically, it'll create a problem record. This tracks from a longer-term perspective that we want to track. Okay. So what I want to do now, so this is where you saw. So you saw a number of things in here in terms of the service-level agreements and service-level objectives. One thing I wanted to briefly show you that we didn't show you earlier was the building of the catalog. I wanted to show you that briefly, and then I want to get into the automation also on how some of the automation works, because then we want to keep time for that. So basically, if you look at from a service request perspective, the questions and answers that we had ordered, so basically one of the service requests that was there was actually, you can see that we had a join dinner now admin. Basically, it was a form that we filled out, and all you have to do is put up your form in here. So this form is, you know, only one question. Let's look at the application issue one. So you will see number of questions there. So that way, at least you have a little idea of how easy it is to create these forms from a service catalog perspective. I'm going to close this one out. And you can see that it's very easy to create the service request forms that you see on the web. You have your DinnerNow application. You provide an icon that's there. You create a template. The template defines basically the process it goes through, whether you need an approval or not, whether you need automation or not, whether you need manual activity or not, whether you need parallel activities or sequential activities. You can control all that in the template itself. And then basically you simply enter these forms in terms of the questions. You enter the questions you want to ask the user. You could support different types of questions here. You have a text question. You have a date and time, decimal, file attachment. You saw a file attachment that he put in there. And a powerful feature is basically you have lists, and then in other one you have is basically query results, where actually you can show and select items from CMDB in this case. And you will see some of this feature as we go into another session for private cloud. So some of the things is very powerful that you don't have any code required in this case. It just basically you create these forms like this, and then basically you configure your prompts. In configuration, basically you figure out whether you want to put any length restrictions or what kind of query you want, and then what kind of other restrictions or input validation you want. And then you map your prompts to the different fields. You can see that I've mapped the classification to the category here. I've mapped the title to the title here, so I can map the different things in there, and then you're kind of done. That's as easy as to create the form in here, okay? So that's one portion of this thing I wanted to show you. Now I'm going to switch back to the slides here a little bit. And let's see, that's number two. Okay. So you saw how we operate. So we saw service level agreements. We saw that. Now you want to monitor and optimize also in this case, right? So basically you look at things that I can automate and automate or not. So when I automate the things, I want to, things that I want to change, right? If I want to change something that, hey, this automatically should restart for now, that automation, so they didn't have to file service requests. But it has to go through a change process or release process. It's very, very critical in your data center practices. Anything we heard from our customers, when we show something, what about change, right? They need to make sure we have appropriate change. More than a third of incidents and stuff arise because people don't have proper change processes in place. And you can look at, so we have change and release are bundled in Service Manager 2012, so it's part of System Center 2012. And you can look at change management makes decisions about individual changes, and then release deploys one or more approved changes, right? So you might have a weekly release cadence, you might have a monthly release cadence, and then you put in all these changes that you want, that a user's requesting, into these release cadences that you have. And then we have built-in integration between the release process and the change process within Service Manager. And what I'm going to go through, I'm going to skip through some of these things as we want to go into the automation stuff. And I'll have Eamon come in to say, how we actually automated the process to say, so that it doesn't require my manual intervention to restart for this incident, right? I should be able to fix it before Srikant finds the problem. So I'll hand it over to Eamon. We'll go through some of this here now.
Great. Thanks, Eamon. Okay, so let me just walk you through a little bit about, you saw what kind of happens on the front end. So how you create all of the service catalogs and what you push those to the portal and how the user does it. And you saw the scenario there where maybe tier one has a script they were running to actually go and fix the issue, and they've escalated it now, and I can basically be tier two. And so it's going to continue to happen. We actually don't want to have to come in, have that incident be generated, and then have that tier one keep running this script every single time they see it. So I'm going to show you a little bit about how you can actually go about solving that just for this one scenario, and then think about abstracting that out for all the different things you might do in your organization that require a bunch of manual tasks. So you can see here the site is up and running. But what I'm going to do actually now is go back into Service Manager and show you how to connect up automation into Orchestrator, and then talk a little bit about how Orchestrator works combined with Service Manager. Okay, so inside of here we have these templates. So I'm going to find this Dinner Now incident template. So what I've done is I've created this and I've called it auto because it's going to go ahead and actually resolve incidents automatically once we import them from Ops Manager into Service Manager. So how that is done basically is you go into the administration and you saw these connectors that Caitlin showed earlier. I'm going to select on the Orchestrator one. And you see it come up. And you can tell here how this is syncing into the Orchestrator, bringing all of the runbooks over. So that's how that connector works. It just ties into our web service inside of Orchestrator, and it brings all of them up. So now let me show you what that template I just created looks like. So we have these alerting routing rules. So you can tell here we have an existing one. All it does is bring over the alerts from OM and puts them into Service Manager. But I'd like to change that and actually select one that actually goes and changes it to that auto. So here you can see that dinner incident template auto. And so now what I've done is I've tied that template to automation. So I'm going to click OK. And so what I'm going to try to do now is go and stop the site just like Caitlin did before and see what will happen between Service Manager and Orchestrator now that we've actually gone and tried to automate this process so that you don't even get that alert coming in that you have to act on. Okay, there it goes. So all I'm going to do now is switch over and go ahead and stop the site. It was back up and running that Caitlin had. I'm going to actually go and stop it. So you'll get the very similar error that the user got before. And because Ops Manager is monitoring all this, it's going to find all those alerts and send them over to Service Manager, just like you saw Katen do. So I could go and try to hit the site. And it's probably down if I hit it. So there it goes.
You don't need me?
I might need you to start that script again. But let me see actually what's supposed to happen in the background. And how we can actually have Orchestrator do it. So I'm going to hop over and show you what actually is being called by that auto piece. Okay. So you saw in Service Manager where I connected up through the connector and I brought in all the runbooks into Service Manager. And then there's a template you create that basically says, okay, for this template, when you see this alert, call these runbooks. So what I've done in the background, since I'm a tier 2 and I know more about it, I've actually created a runbook that I actually go and try to resolve that issue on the site, so it will be back up and running without ever actually having any user see the problem or have them run the script. And so how Orchestrator looks like, it's basically a designer that you have that allows you to create runbooks over here for different activities. They can be created for anything you want inside your data center or anywhere in the client. And then we ship it a bunch of activities over on the right. So these are all standard activities, about 100 of them, that come out of the box that allow you to connect up things, describe your process, and then implement it inside this designer. You can see here from this one that I'll just walk you through a little bit of how it works. So what we do is we pass in the information from Service Manager into Orchestrator. We go inside of here. Everything is forms-based. We actually go get that activity from Service Manager. You can see here again, we're going to pull out anything that contains the service interruption, and it's related to the application pool, because that's what I stopped. Again, you could define any rules you wanted here. And the nice thing about this, all this information, it's not in Orchestrator. It's in Service Manager. And whatever system you connect to, all that domain knowledge or domain data is pulled from the target system and made available to you inside of Orchestrator when you do your authoring. So again, because all this information in Service Manager, I can just select what I want through forms-based authoring, just like I selected those other ones, and fill in the values. I don't know if any of you saw, this actually just turned green here because the automation just kicked in. So I can actually tell that there's something happening in this runbook based on Service Manager. Again, all we do is these are activities right out of the box. You can see here in Orchestrator, I'm testing that Dinner Now app. I'm looking to see if the service is unavailable. And I'm continuing down based on if it's a failure. I'm going to try restarting the site. I'm going to test it again. Then that script you saw running before to restart it, if you have PowerShell scripts in your environment, you've got batch scripts in your environment, you've got all these different things you're using to keep your data center up and running now, with Orchestrator, you can actually bring all of those into one system and then be able to manage it in a consistent way there. So you can always make sure that whatever's run, it's actually run from what you've defined. So no longer do you need to keep your scripts everywhere. I would bring them into Orchestrator, just like this PowerShell script here can actually go and just run that command. And then if it tests, we'll test it again. If it is, we'll go and mark it resolved. So again, we go back to Service Manager, and we make the status resolved. We can update the activity, and we can close it. So automatically, you can basically, based on what you need to do with your process, you just define it. That's the first thing you need to really figure out is what is your process. Define what that is, and then you automate it. And then once you automate it, it's really forms-based authoring inside. Just like there was in Service Manager to create those forms, you just drag and drop and create forms. Inside of here, we really designed it for IT professionals to actually build these workflows themselves. This isn't a dev experience. If you have PowerShell, you can bring it in. If not, you can use any of the built-in activities to actually go and build these runbooks. And again, we ship with a bunch of integration packs that come right out of the box for you as well if you're using other system center products. So maybe you want to do provisioning that you'll see some of yesterday. You literally just build up your provisioning scenarios here and then have them called from the self-service portal. Okay, so that's basically how you build runbooks. And I can tell here if I go to the log history that it just completed, and you can actually go, and I should be able to see that it is back up and running.
Are you sure?
I don't know. I will go. I know we're running some short in time, so I'll see if it actually came or not. It may take a while. So it's running. looks like it's not returning as fast, which is a good sign. So what's actually happened there is we've actually gone and reset the default app pool because that was the problem, and now it's back up and running. And that other tier three or the developers or whatever is causing the problem allows them time to actually go fix the problem and come back with a real solution. But from an SLA and just keeping your end users up and running, you basically leverage the automation, put in the solution you need now, and then a week or two or three when they have the solution, you can actually go either leave the runbook or else deactivate it, and you automatically have the solution. So that's kind of how you build up all this knowledge in your runbooks together with Service Manager and tie them together just as you need to. Okay, that's running ahead. I'm going to jump back out of here, but the one thing I'll show you also is we do have an orchestration console that allows you to actually go and see what happened to those runbooks inside your environment. So I could actually go select one that ran, and you can see exactly what it does. So if you want to go and troubleshoot later, you can actually see exactly what runbook was called, and it tells you what happened along the way. So this kind of gives an operator's view into all the runbooks, and we've hooked this into Service Manager. So if you want from in Service Manager, you can go directly to this URL and land on the runbook you need. Okay, so let's go back and see. Ta-da! So it did it there. You can see all that happened automatically. All of the incidents got closed inside a Service Manager. You never had to have the Tier 1 look at it at all. So you've based, if there was a lot of these things happening over and over again, like in requesting access, reset my password, all these things you see, just spend a little bit of time, probably an hour or two, depending on what the process is or more. Once you define the process, building it is actually pretty easy. It really is easy to build these runbooks. We have tons of them on the website to download as samples, so you'll get the hang of it. Once you do it, you just do more and more of those, and you build up this whole library of runbooks that then you can use for all different types of scenarios in your environment. Okay, so I'm going to switch back and talk for about 2 minutes so we can answer some questions. Just closing out, what does it really mean to have a self-service portal? What does private cloud mean? What does IT as a service mean? Okay, so that was kind of the full loop. You saw Caden kind of come up and says, okay, what does it take? You got to first populate your CMDB. You got to build up these catalogs that you're going to deliver as self-service. Then they're going to go. They're going to see that self-service for your end users. They're going to request it. And you can see this operate, monitor, optimize scenario where you continually make it better behind the scenes. The end user had no idea that you've now automated the back end. To them, they still got it the first time. It just took longer. But now the next user who gets it is going to be automatic, and they're going to get it even faster. And so you can kind of see that unless you invest in the automation in the back end, you're never really going to get to the end result of having them have it on demand. So that's kind of how you have to bring the self-service and the automation together where it makes sense. So really think about inside your own organization when you bring it back, what can I really automate, what can't I, where's the approval, and always think about it from those terms, self-service and automation. And that will really enable you from the end to actually deliver on those three things we talked about before. That's standardization. That's the first thing you have to get. That gives you all the compliance, regulatory, simplified. You want self-service. You saw that first thing I talked about. This is where you're really going to get the value. And there's almost everything is self-service to some extent. You deliver IT services and then consume them. That's that DC admin we saw and the consumer. You're that DC admin in a lot of these cases, delivering those services up. And so leverage all of the different tools inside of the System Center product to actually deliver on that. So anything, if you've got virtualization, VMM will tie in there and feed into SM. Ops Manager, all the different pieces you deploy. The more you deploy, the more value you get. You don't require them, but you can see they all integrate well together. And similarly from orchestration, more of those you have in the environment, the easier it is to integrate. I will say about Orchestrator, it's really built for integration. That's what it does. So if you have other things in your environment, so you may be using, you know, competitor product for virtualization, you may be doing a different help desk, it really doesn't matter. There's a bunch of IPs we ship out of the box that allow you to integrate into those other environments as well. So still think about the process, still think about self-service, and it doesn't really matter what the tools or integration you have to have in the back end. You can still build those runbooks and those processes you need and tie them into that self-service capability. So don't get stuck on just on using those. Just think about whatever it is. You should be able to do it in Orchestrator, and there's a very easy SDK where you can add in more. There's a bunch of samples that customers like you have published to CodePlex on what they've done and other integration packs they've built. So it's really a rich community about building these automation pieces, and we kind of see this as the future as we go forward, where you have self-service and automation tied together. Okay. So hopefully everybody will fill out the surveys. We'd love to get your feedback on the content you saw, how the demos went, really understand what you're looking for as we go forward and deliver more of these sessions. So please spend the time on that. And then also, there's some other sessions coming up. So if you want to see more about Orchestrator or more about Service Manager, maybe we're going to spend more time in one area, not the other. There's additional sessions you can look at either coming up or look at the recorded sessions later in the content or take any of the labs or any of the content available on TechNet. There's really a rich source of content for this stuff, and it's building up all the time. Okay, with that, we have a few minutes left. I'd love to just stop and actually have Kate and Srikant come up and allow for some questions you might have on what you saw, and hopefully we can answer them. So again, thanks a lot.